afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in my series, The News in Reviews. As always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel from, well, apart from the panel member that is sitting in a wind tunnel, from Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and teacher Sam Moffey. Sam, good to talk to you.
Simon, it's a pleasure to be here as always. Lot to talk about, lot to solve, lot not to solve, and but to, at least we're trying.
I caught some news earlier today. There's a bit of a water problem in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, Toledo. I sure wish I was in the water business up in Toledo. Some sort of algae has gotten into their water system and they really fouled it up, as they say. And the whole, you know, the city, I think it's the third largest city in my state, Cleveland and Columbus being one and two. I think Columbus is one and Cleveland is two, and then comes Toledo. But 400,000 people, I mean, they have no water, literally. They're not supposed to shower. They can't drink it, obviously. And so they're trying to get, and it's not just homes. It's restaurants, homes, businesses, the whole water system has been shut down. And the governor has declared a water emergency, which is really weird because Toledo sits on, the, you know, Lake Erie and all that fresh water we have that we always thought was one of the great things about living in the middle Ohio. Northeast Ohio is now damaged by some algae, and we're all wondering what the EPA is going to blame it on. My guess is they'll blame it on the fracking industry or something of that nature. But hopefully all those folks will get it cleaned up, and technology and American know-how will get it cleaned up, identify the source of the problem, and hopefully the Ebola virus doesn't strike in Toledo for anybody drank that water.
Right. And I was merely assuming that you were taking precautions and sticking to wire and beer.
Well, yeah, definitely wine, not so much beer, though my wife's been on a Heineken drinking binge lately. We're not even in the same water system. Toledo's 7 hours or 6 hours away from me, 5 hours away, and they get their water from whatever. We get our water from the beautiful Aqua, Ohio, right down the street from us, which is in no danger right now of being, you know, contaminated unless somebody decides to dump some chemicals in it. Last thing I did see a yellow bus called the Mary Franksters and driving by, and they were talking about spiking our water supply with acid. If you remember the great electric Kool-Aid acid test, that's a little trivia question for people out there in the internet land. Go Google Ken Kesey and the Mary Franksters.
Right. Okay. Let's move on to the rest of our panel. From the City of Angels, we have well-known psychologist Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, always good to talk to you.
Simon, it's my pleasure to be on. Hope everyone is well. Looking forward to having a nice show with you today.
By the way, quick question for you. Yep. Do you subscribe to the Journal of Social Psychology?
I do not, and why do you ask?
Oh, they have a fascinating article about how 27 serious reports or papers really cannot be reproduced.
What do you mean, like about experiments and so forth?
Yeah.
Huh. The
idea
sometimes is that experimenters sometimes hope for a particular result, and sometimes that skews the data.
Yeah. Right. No, you might want to check into it. I found it fascinating reading. I'll send you the link later.
Okay, I'll look forward to that.
I'm from Springfield, Illinois, veteran radio and TV newsman T.J. Hart. T.J., always good to talk to you.
Good afternoon, Simon. Hope all is well down in Picayune, Mississippi.
And whoever's in the wind tunnel, and I'm sure it's Bill Conrad, please stop.
I've been sitting with my microphone muted, so how would you be getting wind from me?
I don't know. TJ, I caught the first part of your guest broadcast last Monday, and I was rolling on the floor laughing. You had a delightful rant about CNN and HLN.
Oh yeah, that was fun. That was the old days. Yeah, back when I used to be a contributing reporter for CNN and HLN. That was something else. I mean, it's like the old story about sausage, yummy to eat, but boy, you don't want to see how it's made. And if ever start criticizing perhaps maybe the people who were bringing you the news on the local level, just remember that they might not have the sophisticated equipment and toys that the big folks do at the cable networks, but they do actually talk to the people whom they're reporting on, and it's a whole different ball game. You're probably going to get more accurate news from your local TV station or radio station than you would perhaps from the cable outlet, simply because they really don't have time to do all the fact checking. They're in the race to be first, and sometimes that backfires because it's better to be maybe second and correct than first and worst. And I've seen that happen on both ends of the spectrum. I'd much rather be second and best than first and worst.
I don't want to prolong this, but I seem to recall a telephone call from you. And it went along the lines of, Simon, I'm stood outside the green room, and guess who is in there? Misty Crossland.
Indeed, I was in Jacksonville, Florida, waiting to go on the air. This goes back to the disappearance of Haley Cummings, and the big story was, Misty Crosland is missing. Where could she be? No one has seen her for days. She's sitting out in the green room, and I'm having a 20-minute conversation with her. One of many 20-minute conversations I've had with this young lady. And we get ready to go on the air for the Nancy Grace show. And I'm telling one of the producers in my headset and off air, I said, I just got in talking to Misty Crosland. She's got some stuff that she just told me. She said, where did you see her? The hell, she's in the green room. She goes, well, how did she get there? I said, limousine. She showed up with the other guest. And she goes, you mean we paid for a limousine and that girl took a ride? I said, yeah. If you thought she was lost, she's not. She's really about 60 feet away. And the producer told me point blank, we've spent way too many hours putting the graphics together that this girl's missing. So, by God, during the course of this show, she's still missing. Do you understand that? I said, do you understand problems with the truth? And I made mention that I just spoke with her toward the last quarter of the show, and that I had just seen her and had conversations with her, and that was it. They cut my mic. I was never seen on camera the rest of the broadcast, and I waited till the limousine had me just about home, because I figured if I did this prematurely, it'd be a long walk, And I called the producer and I said, I can't do this anymore. What I'm going to be reporting on the radio news tomorrow is going to be the truth. And what I was stuck with on TV last night was, well, it wasn't something that I'm proud of. So I'm done. And I said, if you guys ever want to go back to perhaps maybe doing truthful broadcasting, I might be interested, but right now I'm not. And I wasn't. And that was it. I never worked on the Nancy Grace Show ever again, and probably never will.
And our final guest is from New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to a great show today. So I'm sitting back waiting, and let's get going.
Yeah,
I see that your governor is still larger than life, excuse the pun. Chris Christie has promised to change New Jersey's liberal Supreme Court, the ad says. Over and over, he has broken his promise. Any thoughts on your well-endowed governor?
It's like the old joke. He only lies when his lips are moving. He's very full of himself, and apparently he's full of a lot of other people too, because you got to account for that weight somehow. Yeah, he makes a lot of promises. He doesn't keep them, and he's just, I haven't figured out, what it is that he's trying to do, other than he's just working for himself, and everyone else gets to come along for the ride.
Okay, let's get on with the, let's get on with the program. Obviously, I'm going to hit some hot buttons here. Israel and Palestine continue to act like naughty two-year-olds. The problem is, they are two-year-olds with guns. Nasty things. The 72-hour ceasefire lasted, less than 90 minutes. Actually, it's amazing that it lasted that long. Yeah, odd that Palestine's usual buddies are not shouting from the rooftops. Odd that Israel's buddies are equally quiet about the whole deal. One might draw the conclusion that the world is just fed up with this pointless and mostly boring bickering and waste of life. Sam, obviously, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, I am always the lucky one. Lead off hitter. I want to change the wording a little, okay, Simon? It's not Palestinian. It's Hamas. I don't really think that the Israelis want to kill, like a lot of other people do, who have no view of real worldwide what's gone on there for years. And we've all agreed it's been going on for centuries. And if you don't recognize that, you don't belong in a discussion. And if I want to tell anybody, if you really want to know what this is all about and how it's gone on for years and years and years and years, please pick up the novel The Source by James Michener, and it's 1,200 pages long, but you need to read it and understand why this is Jews and Christians and Muslims have been fighting for years and years and years over there. And I recommend that to anybody. That's number one. Number two, Hamas celebrates death and Israel celebrates life, and I believe that. I mean Hamas. I feel bad for those Palestinians. I feel bad for everybody getting killed. but civilians get killed in wartime. That's part of Hamas's mentality. I also think it's very interesting that the so-called alleged leader of Hamas is living in some five-star hotel in some other Arab country, one of the few Arab countries that's sympathetic to Hamas, by the way, while his people are getting killed in, on the ground. They're hiding. They don't have electricity. They don't have food and whatnot because of this war. And that's a big mistake that we in the West are making. The political leadership of Hamas is not in tune with the military leadership. The military leadership of Hamas runs this. Now, I also want to point out, and this, to me this sums up the battle of what's going on. Israel uses their money, whether from the United States or with their own, to build a Iron Dome defense missile system that had probably saved hundreds, if not thousands, of Israeli lives, property, and all that stuff. That Iron Dome, Israel's had over 5,000 missiles fired at it. Majority of the big ones have been destroyed by the Iron Dome defense. Hamas uses all the money they get, petrodollars, aid, whatnot, money from the United States, us taxpayers. They build terror tunnels. While their people are living in shacks, and it's one of the most congested places in the world, they take all that money. They don't build, and it's on the Mediterranean. I mean, the Gaza Strip has a piece of it that I'm sure would be a gorgeous place if Hamas would, if the Palestinian, not Hamas, the other one, Fatah, was in charge of that and building an infrastructure to bring in tourism and things of that nature, it'd be a natural place for that. But obviously they don't. They dump all their money into terror tunnels. If you haven't seen those things where the people, where children are forced to dig there, there's been, I've read reports where thousands of children have died in building those tunnels over the years. They use their children. It's been proven that they've hidden their missiles in UN places, in mosques, in schools, in people's homes. You know, they have to be, Hamas has to be wiped out. And it's not just the Israelis who want them gone. The Egyptians don't want anything to do with them either because they're part of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Egyptians are in lock, stock, and barrel with the Israelis who are trying to destroy Hamas. They're the ones who also jointly have the blockade because there are too many weapons and offensive weapons, terrorist weapons are being brought into that. I want to see a Palestinian state that is not with Hamas, that is a legitimate state where people want to live in peace, can go as they want, and that's it. But obviously when you see Hamas, with what they're about, with what they do and what they stand for, heck, the Constitution or whatever you want to call it, calls for the death of all Jews, the death of America, the destruction of Israel, and they haven't backed down from that. And then the sting, and I'm going to last on this, the sting about in certain media outlets, especially the BBC and especially Aaron Burnett on CNN, where the body count is the most important thing, it's just ludicrous. It's just ludicrous. No one wants to see anybody get hurt. The Israelis have lost mostly soldiers. You know, does that make it okay? There have also been hundreds of Israeli soldiers injured, just like in our wars. Our wars of aggression in Iraq and Afghanistan, we haven't had a lot of soldiers killed, blessedly, but we've had 50, 60,000 injured because of our superior technology and medical. The Israelis have had hundreds of soldiers wounded and brought up. So, it's a war, and that's what happens. Civilians die. If anybody can show me, since the history of mankind, where there hasn't been a war where innocents have been slaughtered, please tell me, because that's all I've ever read about. And I do want to interject this. I am biased, okay? My wife lived in Israel. I'm Jewish myself, and I also have two nephews who have been called up in the reserves and are in Gaza right now. I want to say that I am a very biased person. That said, let other people talk, please.
One very quick question for you before I move to the rest of the panel. You said that the leader of Hamas is staying in a five-star hotel. Would that be possibly in Qatar?
That's how you pronounce it. The only reason I didn't say that is I keep pronouncing it Quasar, like that electronics company that went out of business. I can't, so thank you. I couldn't pronounce it. Is it Qatar? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Yeah, them and the Turks. That's the other thing I want everybody to understand, too. Qatar, I guess that rhymes with guitar, and Turkey, I think, are the only countries that are really speaking out about what's going on. Everyone wants the radicals of whatever it is, the radical, the skinheads gone. We all do. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of the Hamas. I'm sick of Hezbollah. I'm sick of radical skinheads in our own country or in other countries. And the world needs to step up to the plate in all their own countries and get rid of these crazy groups that offer nothing but death, destruction, and everything else. I mean, why we're focusing on this? Look what's going on to the Islamic State, aka ISIS. Which is now killing and displacing people all over the place, and then putting their heads on spikes and parading it. I mean, we are going. They are taking us back to the Dark Ages, and that's got to stop.
And okay, and Sam, you gave a delightful rendition. Let's ask the rest of the panel their thoughts. TJ, you're a newsman. What do you make of what's going on?
Well, you're getting a wide variety of different reports, depending on who you ask. BBC has one version of what's going on over there. Then Sky Television has another version. So the U.S. coverage, they try to be as down the middle as they possibly can. I will tell you that this last bombing raid that hit yet another UN school has dropped the ire of the State Department, and they've condemned Israel's action on this here in the last 24 hours. However, the word is that they were after some known figureheads of the of Hamas who were in the streets at that time, thinking that they could get them with a strike. And these things aren't as precise as you always want them. However, where were they? They were right there by a UN school. What was under the school? Well, if you ask the Israelis, they said, well, they had weapons down there in the basement. I'm not seeing anything that said that they did, and I'm not seeing anything that said they didn't, so it's unsubstantiated at this point. But you'll find that any poll that you see, whether it's a Marist poll or a Gallup or anything, is that folks are more sympathetic toward the Israelis than they are Hamas. However, they are a bit more than disappointed that innocent lives are being taken in this battle. So what you're seeing is that, once again, Hamas is really good at staging situations where they will... is reported by people like Reuters and a few others, and at times the Associated Press. They're famous for putting people in harm's way in order to get the death count up to try to get some sympathy. Hamas does not want peace. As long as there is friction, as long as there is turmoil, as long as there is some way to get money to try to further what they want to do, they'll really stop at nothing. And these are reports that have come from other sources. I have never been there, so I can't really tell you from anything on the ground, only from different sources that do have resources on the ground. And like I said, it varies. BBC is more fixated on the death toll as well as some factions of CNN and MSNBC. You know, Fox takes it to the other extreme. Your CBS, NBC, and CBS are trying to take it down the middle as best as they possibly can. So it's not a good thing. I mean, war is never good, but you're seeing a very small part of the globe, a very small dot that is under fire, and the thing is that small dot can fracture out into other parts of the world pretty quickly and spawn other wars, and that is very probable. And that's the scary part.
And Gary, I'm interested in your thoughts. Put on your thinking cap.
Well, Simon, I think the this is another example, a couple of things. First of all, when you have governments run with more theocracies, more extreme religions, you know, the rules of engagement really become a lot different. It's not so about treasure and economics and things like this. It's more of a jihad. It's more of a caliphate that's going around the world right now, which is really kind of disturbing. So when you have extreme religions, it's amazing how many people die in the name of God, starting at least recently with George W. Bush and his idea. So many people who want to support Israel only because you need to have a unified Israel for the coming of Christ. Now, of course, I think that Israel is totally justified in what they're doing. They're completely justified. And like I've said before on this show, that if the Palestinians had Israel's army and the Israel had Palestinians' army, Israel wouldn't exist. The other part of this whole equation that makes things so difficult is that Americans, we're just merchants of death. All we do is we sell this incredible weaponry around the world, and we sell them to, you know, we should have some kind of person step up, my imaginary president who just figures it out, and says, you know, we're not going to send weapons anymore, certainly not to theocratic countries. And I don't care how many billions of dollars they give us. If all these people are fighting with weapons, a lot of the weapons were manufactured here in the United States. And the mess they were doing and the amount of pain and misery that is given, it's really shameful what we're doing. And so as far as the answer, I don't know. I think that 15 years ago, poked a hornet's nest, and I think it radicalized so many Muslims. We could say they were already radicalized, a lot of them, but it really put that on steroids, and it is just around the globe where people just feel like it's a very powerful need to do this because they just feel so hopeless that the afterlife is definitely a win to what they're going through day to day.
Oh, okay, and Bill, I'd like to hear your opening thoughts.
Okay, you know, I seldom find myself agreeing with Gary, but I think that I think you're right on with the people's frustration of what's going on there. I'm not sure if Israel is entirely right, but, you know, certainly that conflict there is making people get to the point of being extremists. You know, even the most conservative people, when you're trapped in that kind of politics and greed and everything else, people are really flipping out. And I think that the really sad thing about this is that, you know, Israel is losing their allies. They've just been dropping off, you know, so much in the last 20 years. People are fed up with it, and they're losing their compassion for what Israel is going through with Hamas and its neighbors and the Palestinians. You know, we're getting pretty fed up with that. We want it to be over with, but we've certainly lost the compassion of feeling Israel's pain.
Not according to the polls I just saw on all of the talk shows today, that they kind of countered to that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I missed it.
Well, but the thing is, you know, everyone, we all have our thoughts and our feelings and our opinions, and we're all entitled to that, too. I was just going by some of the things that I saw on a variety of the different news channels today on the satellite grid today.
Okay. Now, Sam, you mentioned this, and I'm going to bring it back up. the scorecard. As I recall, there are 63 dead Israelis and 1,700 plus dead Palestinians. This does not sound like a good score. I mean, this probably is one of the reasons that Israel doesn't get the support that maybe it deserves.
Well, I, you know, in America, you know, we love scores, right? We're all competitive, you know, so people would think, hey, the Israelis are winning. I mean, one could interpret it that way because they killed more people. Isn't that one way you judge the victor in a war? Who kills more of the other people? Who takes more of their property, their treasure, as Gary pointed out, and this and that? Who loots, who plunders, and whatnot? They're the winners. I don't view it that way. Like I said, Hamas is, I don't, if the Palestinian people are suffering because Hamas controls them. It's a terror group, one of the worst around. Until they are destroyed and out of the picture running that government over there, those people are going to live like that. Today alone, there were 119 rockets or missiles, whatever you want to call them, fired from Gaza into Israel. That's 119 attempts to kill the Israelis. That's the way I look at that. They've had 10,000 rockets, whatever, fire into Israel. That's 10,000 attempts to kill Israelis. Their weapons are not as good, as Gary has pointed out, as the Israelis because of Iron Dome. You're going to see everybody going to start having missile defenses all over the world now. Think if one would have been in the Ukraine, it might have intercepted that missile that shot down that airliner. You're going to start seeing that. You know, the wars, this is the proxy war. All wars are proxy wars because, as Gary and Bill have pointed out, we have to, someone's got to make some money on it, and you know, we certainly dump a lot of money into our weaponry as do other countries, and this is a proxy war right now. Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, Iran. I don't know if anybody saw that. People are already, experts from Israel and the United States and other people are already determining that some of these missiles were manufactured in Iran, which is also scary. Thinking that with a blockade that Egypt and Israel both have on Gaza. How the heck is that stuff getting in there? Is there a tunnel that goes all under the Middle East? I don't know. But, I mean, I was amazed. Now, Wolf Blitzer, I hope everyone saw that, and you can go on CNN and click it on. Go look at the tunnel that they went into before the IDF blew it up. It's amazing that they can spend that type of money, that type of effort into taking care of, you know, building that with monies that are meant to build schools, hospitals, fix their roads, put a McDonald's, whatever you want to say there, doesn't get there. Instead, they build terror tunnels that go 5, 6, 7 miles into Israel, where they pop up and, you know, and they kill people, kidnap, whatever they want to do. And Israel is so justified because of the rockets and those tunnels that they have no other choice, because we have to look at it from a point of view that what if that was us being attacked? Look, those planes got flown into the 911. Children got killed, right? And civilians got killed. They've declared war on us. And so civilians are going to die. Innocents are going to die, like I said earlier, and I'll say it again. That's what happens in war. The key is to get rid of war and have peace. Now, I don't know, as Gary pointed out and Bill concurred, how do you do that when there's so much money being made off it? Look how many proxy wars we have. We've got the Israeli-Gaza conflict. We have the Ukrainian conflict. We have the half of Africa conflict. We have the ISIS conflict. I'm probably about the only, you know, we have the war on the Mexican-American border conflict. Where isn't there war? You know, it's happening all over the world. And, you know, the key has to be is how do we stop that from happening? Well, you know, maybe we need, until people realize there's no money in making guns and bullets and that, and, you know, we're going to have it. And it's sad that it's being fought in the name of one God or this or that. And to me, the big lesson of this is the extremists have to go. And unfortunately, they're not going to go willingly. They're not just going to lay down their weapons. They're not going to give up like the when Robert E. Lee knew it was over, they laid their weapons down and they went home. Okay? These type of terrorists don't fight that way. You know, I mean,
can I interject for 1 minute? I just want to say, I want to answer your question real quick about how does it end. Let me just make two suggestions on how it ends. Number one, you legalize drugs, and you take a lot of billions of dollars out of really bad people's hands, and you invest all of our so much of our money in making us a carbon neutral country, because a lot of the states, a lot of the Islamic states, a lot of the radicalized states, really only have the ability to wage war based on petrodollars, based on heroin, based on drugs. And if we could just say to our at least we could do what our country is say, we are going to totally legalize every drug, just go to a pharmacy and get it, and spend at least half of our defense budget on making our country carbon neutral. I think a lot of the ability of these countries to wage war, because, you know, otherwise all we're doing is weed whacking. We just keep on weed whacking all the time, and someone's got to think of a way to get to the root of the problem to stop all this misery.
It's a good step in the right direction. I have no problem with that. I'm all for legalization of drugs, and I'm all, which I think is a great idea to get rid of the bad guys, as you want to say. The more green energy, cleaner energy we have, wind power, people have been talking about that for years. Not so much about the legalization of drugs, because there's still a lot of people out there who don't understand that. It might take a generation or two, Gary. But as far as what really pisses me off is we've been talking about in 72, the Yom Kippur War, when the Arab nations turned off the spigot when Nixon was president, when the Israelis were about to had counterattack and were about to destroy the whole Egyptian army in the Sinai, the Arabs went on an oil embargo. And that had a huge effect on our country, and that's what we played scared. And you're right, Gary, they used that money back then. Not so much now, but there's still a couple. The Qatar has a lot of dough, they're in Iran, and they're funding the Hamas. And you're right, I think, you know, the more we do things like that, the better the world will be. Think of all the new jobs you create, too. And that's a good thing, too. But, you know, until that giant octopus known as the military-industrial complex, to quote Ike, who was one of them, who's right? Eisenhower came right from the bosom of the military-industrial complex, warned us of that way back when, and we've known about even, you know, Jimmy Carter. A lot of people said he was a failed president. I remember he was one of the few guys to start talking about the energy crisis back in 1980, and people laughed at him. And he had some good ideas. And look what happened to him. The corporations that control the carbons made him look like a fool, made him look like an idiot. And he wanted that stuff. And, you know, we have to change all that sort of things. And we have to get out of this, going back to Simon's original question, we got off on it. Is that the most important thing when you're fighting a war, the scorecard? Or what's the battle about? If someone attacks the United States or our country, and we counterattack with our superior weaponry and what have you, and we wipe out a ton of citizens, which happened in Iraq, which happened in was wrong, and happened in Afghanistan, which was a little bit righter because at that point the Taliban was running the show, civilians got killed. Where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? Okay, where was the outrage? Because we were justified. But I happen to think there's an underlying current of anti-Semitism in some countries, some countries' leaderships, some countries' and media that have to make the Zionist. I've actually heard that word Zionist used in the year 2014. But what my non-Jewish friends around here are now, they're all to the thing, when they saw the tunnels, and I'm going to come back to this, when they saw the tunnels being built, no, it was built with slave, little labor, Palestinians being forced to go dig those tunnels. Children have died. They know that we spend oodles of tax dollars over to them to try to keep the peace. and it's being used to dig tunnels to be used to attack on Israel and civilians. Hamas has been losing the battle of public relations big time. They can only win, as TJ pointed out, by holding up dead baby, waving the bloody shirt or the bloody baby and saying, see, look at these evil Jews. And that's been their calling card, because they're hurting for money, they're hurting for attention, and this is what this is what they need. That's how they have to win. And that's a pretty sad thing when you're going to put hide weapons on the children and churches. Now, Sam, I do want to bring this one thing up. Anybody thinks Hamas doesn't fight fair needs to, I sent you that email, that the Hamas has booby-trapping children, booby-trapping other people, handicapped people in homes when the IDF forces would go in to try to rescue them and the houses would be blown up. And that's what they do. Very similar to what the North Vietnamese did with all their booby traps, because they knew that's the way they were going to defeat a superior power is with booby trapping and tricks and things of that nature. That's their game. They put innocents in the way, and people have to realize that. Because if Hamas had to stand up and fight a conventional war, as Gary pointed out, against Israel, they're going to lose. So they have to have the human shield. It's their own people, and it's a damn shame.
TJ, you've been very quiet. I'd like your view on the scorecard, shall we say. You know, 63 dead Israelis, 1,700 dead Palestinians.
To some people, that's the big score. CBS News made their living off that, starting with the Vietnam War. They trained some elements of society to keep score that way. Now, getting back to some of the other things that were mentioned, these radical faith theocracies and their followers and what have you, this started way back before recorded history. It continues today, but when it started with the Muslims, they started doing this back in the 7th century, and if you read your history, it didn't start on 9/11, okay? This stuff with these guys started many, many centuries ago, and they had taken a good part of the Arabic world and were moving into places like Spain and parts of Europe. And finally, they got repelled a few centuries into this. And, of course, you have the things, these little things called the Crusades. You know, that was at least a couple of hundred years of wars that took place and what have you. And the Muslims have always been the ones who have been the aggressors. They were the ones who were out for conquest. They were the ones who were out to control the world in the name of their faith. And let's face it, there are other religions that try to go out and proselytize. There are other religions who will go out and send their missionaries, but they don't go out with guns. They don't go out with bombs. They don't go out with swords. They go out trying to share an idea. And maybe ideas are more dangerous than soldiers. I don't know. But the thing is that these folks have come in by force, and their whole mantra is when they start taking over new lands and different cultures is that you will convert. If you don't convert, you'll be taxed. If you can't pay the tax, you will be killed. Then as old as the religion is. it's in their holy text. It's their instruction book for, you know, dominion and for taking over the world as they see it. And they'll not stop at it. The reason you're having problems with ISIS and the other groups, Taliban and what have you, is that, and I think I brought this up last week, Taliban is having big problems with ISIS, and Al-Qaeda is having big problems with ISIS, because those two, for as bad as they've been known to be, they think ISIS is absolutely crazy. And some of the people who run the Taliban have been interviewed, and they said, we're all about the caliphate and everything, but we just didn't see these guys running the show. And we're not happy with it. And so they can't make up their mind how Islam is to look in the modern day. And yet they really haven't gone too much farther than what it looked like in the beginning, other than the weapons that they used to carry out their conquest. So, yeah, they're a scary bunch. They've been around a while. They practice patience. They'll wait 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years to get back what they think is absolutely theirs. And, you know, they're very headstrong and they're very determined. And I don't know how you change that mindset. I really don't. You know, it's incomprehensible to me, that mindset.
Oh, okay. I want to move on. Because I'm looking at the clock ticking away. Bill, I'm going to start with you on this one. Reports are that investigators have finally been given access to the MH17 crash site. However, rumor has it that due to a lack of manpower, the Ukrainian separatists are protecting the site with landmines. I'm just curious about your initial thoughts on this.
I'm just appalled. If you want to have the rest of the world support you in some of your political radicalness, you do some things to at least appease what the rest of the world thinks is just thinks that you should be part of the solution instead of creating more of a problem. I would think that they would get so much mileage if they were part of helping to sort this thing out, even if they're going to do something to muddy the actual results. I would think that you should be nice as pie and try to convince the world that you weren't the people doing it. But by putting in these landmines and everything else and doing everything to stop people from investigating it, you know, you're just owning up as, you know, your guilt. You know, just even from a humanitarian point of view, you know, if you're not going to say we made a mistake and shot down the wrong plane, there's so many other strategies I would think that are better than what they're doing here, and yeah, it's very frustrating to watch.
I think that was a hurricane somewhere.
ISIS is coming.
Oh no.
No, ISIS is a really nice, slow-moving river in Oxford. It's great for punting on. Gary, do you have any thoughts? Well, not about the river ISIS.
Right, obviously. You know what? I really don't have a lot of... what's happening with Ukraine and with Russia and the fact that they don't let people in, for God's sakes, you know, people seem to be outraged that there are a lot of bad actors in a lot of the wars that are going on. And, you know, the kids getting killed and they're not letting the press in. It's an ugly, miserable business. We are the kettle calling everyone else black. We have just so little credibility with after what we did the last 15 years. But, you know, I mean, what? What are we going to do? They shot it down. They made a mistake. These people, obviously, there's a lot of things going on in that part of the world. I have no idea why Russia wants to do that, maybe reconstitute the Soviet Union. Seems to be a lot of psychology with Putin. But I don't know why people get so upset. The Malaysian, it should be the Malaysian people. It should be the Dutch people are outraged. It's a nasty, ugly business. And as far as what you said before, Simon, about what's happening in Palestine, when you said, well, the scorecard is that, I mean, I don't know what that means when you say that. I mean, would you feel better if there were 800 Israelis dead? I mean, what does that mean? The strategy of, and by the way, it's not just Hamas. It is the people of that area because they voted these people in. So you get the government you deserve, just like we got George W. Bush, they got Hamas, that people die. And we get so into the story, you know, we get so into the story and the headlines that what would you do if it was us in Mexico and, you know, 200,000 Mexican died and 100 Americans died? Would you say, well, gee, we really, it's not fair? I mean, what would you do?
Well, I agree with you that the scorecard is probably not relevant, but it is a number that you know, people see over and over and over again. So yeah, it has an importance in spin. TJ, you know,
yes.
You've been in radio and TV for a million years. Well,
yeah.
Pretty close to.
Well, at least 40.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, people take notice of the scorecard, don't they?
They do, and it depends on who's telling the story and why they're telling it that a scorecard is created. And, you know, numbers don't lie, but I hate to say it, but the liars often use numbers. So, you know, the scorecard is subjective, but it depends on who's telling the story, who wants to write history, who wants to maybe change the narrative of the story to fit maybe their own feelings or outcomes or beliefs. Everybody's got an agenda. And believe me, nations are no different, and media outlets are no different. Media has pretty much the same agenda, get people to watch your screen or listen to your signal or to dial your Internet page up and get those page hits. It's all about who's going to consume my product. And like I said, CBS was very successful during the Vietnam War by always, you know, rolling the death count in the war, and it worked very well for them. So, you know, maybe people are trying to use that as their mechanism. I don't know. I don't know. I know what CBS's agenda was. They wanted the U.S. out of the Vietnam War, and they made no bones about it. Walter Cronkite, even in retirement, said that, yeah, I blurred a few stories, but he said that war was ridiculous and we needed to get out of there. You know, and he was blunt honest about it several years after his retirement. And the thing is, did anybody really fault him? No. But the thing is that scorecards are used to either persuade people to control their thinking or to persuade them one way or another. That's simple as that. It's for public opinion use.
Okay, and Sam, I want to go back to MH17. And the crash site. What did you make of the separatists supposedly, allegedly, planting landmines?
Doesn't surprise me. They're out to start World War III, and in about 13 more days, it'll be the 100th anniversary of that happening of World War I. And about that area, and that's what they're about. They're warriors. That's all they know. I hope the Ukrainian military, I think they got them under siege right now, which kind of scares me, because that's going to be their cue for Putin to call in those troops that aren't already in there to come in there to rescue the the Russian speaking, the, you know, the Russian separatist, and I can see that happening. And but bad news for everybody. I don't know what we can do. We've discussed this before, but you just smell it. You just sense it's going to happen. I don't know if any of you saw the news report about the Russian soldier taking selfies, and then someone they could tell that he was in the Ukraine because of, you know, they could, you know, track him from his selfie picture that he was taking, and it was with his squad. So it's obviously the Russian soldiers are over there. It's obviously someone's got something to hide, protect, or want to start a shooting war over there that has more than the Ukraine versus the separatists. And we're just going to have to hold our breath and see and either hope that the Ukrainians take out the separatists, Putin doesn't do anything, and by not doing anything, they'll lift the sanctions and life will go on again. I saw that Putin moved the pond the other day by boycotting fruits and vegetables from Poland, and as a pawn move by the other the European Union about sanctions. So we talked about these sanctions last week, and I worry about it in the worldwide economy that we have now. You know, we want to punish the Russian bad guys, but at whose peril? The guy working on the line somewhere. The family, the people that get laid off now because there's sanctions and the Russians aren't buying as much stuff. And, you know, it has a really bad worldwide domino effect when we put economic sanctions in, because they do work if they're followed correctly. And what happens? Well, to use a great Ronald Reagan phrase, there's a trickle-down effect, all right, a trickle-down down to the working man who gets laid off because his the government's boycotting or put a hold on the financial end of it, it's economic warfare, and economic warfare could cause a world war. But I have no doubt that mines were there to possibly blow up people, cause more damage and whatnot. That's what those people know. TJ said about, you know, it's been going on for thousands of years in the Middle East. Well, it's been going on for hundreds of years over in the Slavic area, especially the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians who shot down that plane, their grandfathers and grandmothers all buddied up with the SS and the Nazis to take on the Jews, the Gypsies, and were willingly held hands with them not that long ago. World War II wasn't that long ago. And so it's a bad group of people, always has been, and always will be. My attitude is, the Ukrainians should have said, government should have said, you want them, you can have them. I don't know why they want those people in their country. Take them off our hands. We don't want them.
I think you're entirely right. Who to go to next? Bill?
I agree, I agree with Sam. Again, there are so many different options and responses they could have done that, some of them might have even given some credibility, and they missed it. But why do they want all these people here? They should be saying, let's get rid of them. Give them the parts and give them the pieces and send them on their way. We don't want them here, I still don't get it. I don't know why they're making it more difficult when it's better to get rid of everyone that's got their noses into this business, I don't get it.
Right. Gary, there's a new round of Putin punishments, economic punishments, but he enjoys an 80% approval rate at home. So does he really care?
I'm sure he cares, but I'll tell you, Simon, I think what would happen, I think that the U.S. should join with Russia, should join with China, and should join with, we should all come together, because I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a war between the Muslim world and everybody else. And I think that the sooner we figure that out, I mean, sure, this will take care of itself one way or the other. It's got to hurt him on some level. But I really, you know, look, in my small little pea brain, I'm thinking, let's stop being enemies with the Soviet, with Russia. Let's stop being enemies with China. Let's stop being enemies with these people. Come together as a force, and we could really dominate the world and make it anti-extreme religion into all what's going on right now. Because that, to me, again, I kind of go global. I like to think, again, not just weed whacking, but of course it's going to hurt Putin. But I just don't understand, again, in my pea brain, why we don't do that. Why don't we become best friends with Putin?
Oh, I think there's a number of reasons.
yes. Why won't this gorgeous Playboy bunny go out with me? I don't know. Yeah, same thing. There's like 1,000 reasons, of course. It all makes sense in my little head.
And TJ, could you see, you know, China, Russia, and the U.S. becoming great buddies?
I could if Putin was not leading Russia. To be quite honest with you, you know, it's going to be on his terms when he leaves there. I mean, he's appointed himself pretty much emperor. But if it were anybody else in charge over there, I think that's a good plan. We've sided with Russia before when they were, you know, communists during the World War II. And we were partners then in order to get rid of a more evil force. The thing is though, the premise of joining forces with China, with whom we have tensions right now, believe it or not, because they're messing with our ally Japan and a few other things out there in that region of the world. But nothing that would not prevent a working relationship in order to take care of the big problem. I think the plan that was drawn up by our colleague here theoretically could work if the right players were leading the countries in question at the right time. And it would be in the best interest of those countries to take care of that problem, and then they can work on their own after that. But right now, Mr. Putin, according to Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Germany, she says this guy's not playing in his right mind. She's known him for many, many years. And she said, this is not the same guy we were talking to 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago. This fella has a different reality going on. And she's very concerned about it. But she's also concerned about, you know, who's going to keep the fuel flying into her country, too. So they're tiptoeing. They've done, you know, some sanction work. But like the rest of the EU, you have to really, really watch what you're doing. And is this the hill you want to die on at this point in time? Probably not. Are the soldiers a bunch of drunks and thugs and looters? Did they steal these people's credit cards and what have you? Hell yeah, they did. It's been proven that they did. And now putting up landmines around the crash site? Come on. These guys are not good actors at all. As far as should we care, should we give a shit? Well, I think everybody gets outraged when they see people behaving badly. I think people get outraged when they see parents beat kids in public. But we shouldn't do anything about that. Hell, that might make somebody mad. Or if we see other things take place, too. But there's a certain part of each of us as human beings, when we see something that's really, really bad, you just notice it. And it's not something that you wave your flag at that time. It's that flag that gets raised in your head, like, this isn't right. And I don't care what level you're on, these people aren't playing correctly. And I don't know if it's outrage, but I think it raises a flag that these are not good people. These are not people you want to be playing with, and these are people you really don't want to trust. I don't think it's a call for a war in any stretch of the imagination. But I think going back to the question, you know, why should we be concerned? I don't think it's why we should be concerned. I think we are concerned because these people are playing poorly with others. And I think we just notice it. And I think that's what angers people.
Okay. I want to move on. We haven't had a good argument this afternoon, but I'm going to fix that.
Oh, boy.
Congress has set out on a well-deserved 5-week vacation. After months of playing solitaire on their computers, they need a break. The good news is that with them on vacation, the average person, you know, you and me, will not be on tenderhooks wondering what they won't do next. Now, I actually checked out their schedule, and in September, they are set for an absolute bull-busting 10 days of unwork. October's schedule, I couldn't find, but let me read you what the House of Representatives schedule says. There are no events scheduled today. Please use the calendar to browse other dates. I rather liked it. To me, it summed the entire thing up, you know, so well in a single sentence. How can these loons take off for 5 weeks? Sam, as I understand it, they're only scheduled for 113 days this year.
That many. come on, you know, they're the most, you know, it's the ruling class rules less and less. I guess some people might say that's a good thing, they're not in session. They can't screw up the country any more than it is. Some people may say it's a bad thing because we need them there to do. There's so many problems in the world. But, you know, as I've said many times, and I'll say it again, the 435 members of Congress, the Supreme Court, the President, they're bought and sold by the corporation. So that's what's going on. They're going to take their time out, because, especially now, because the midterms are coming, and it's a battle. Will the House go Democrat? Will the Senate go Republican? Vice versa, and that's all they care about. So they're really not going on vacation, guys. They are going to campaign full time from now until November, whenever the election is, the first Tuesday after the first Monday, and see if they can't wrestle control of two houses and really either A, you know, further their agenda, or B, block their agenda. I mean, it all depends, you know, and then that sets up the 2016 election, and, you know, that's all it's about. Non-stop. I mean, it boggles my mind when I hear Republican or media people say, President Obama does non-stop campaigning. Well, so do you guys and women. That's what you do. That's all you do is you campaign. You go out, you raise money, and then you hire your family members to be on your campaign payroll, and life is great. But, you know, you screw up the country, and because then you leave the country in the hands of the bureaucrats who I just, if you all know, the FCC just got busted by the Inspector General. Guess what their employees are doing, guys? You're going to be shocked. They were looking at porn on an average of 8 hours a day because they were bored with their job. And these people are making a minimum 80 grand a year with benefits that you and I would all want to kill for. So government's a mess. It's a bigger mess than people want to say it is. Both parties are out of sync, out of whack, out of anything else when it comes to take care of Main Street. They love Wall Street, and they love themselves, and that's all they care about. And that's another thing that has to change along with what Gary – I'm going to add on to Gary. Gary wants for legalization of drugs. I agree. Want to see more carbon emission, less carbon emission, excuse me, more greenery, power, and all that. I'm for that. I also want to see a third party, and I also want to see federal term limits in. I want to see shackles put on lobbyists and all that sort of stuff, because as long as this continues to go the way it's going, don't be surprised when Congress gives itself a pay raise, gives themselves more money to spend on themselves, works less, and do nothing. It's the do-nothing Congress been going on for years, and it's going to continue that way. But do nothing for the people of this country. They do a lot of stuff for themselves, and that's all they care about. Narcissistic, selfish SOBs who all need to be kicked out of office in November.
Okay. How about mandatory drugs for Congress?
I don't know. They have a drug. It's called money. It's called greed. They're addicted to money. They're addicted to power. I'm sure Gary could talk more about that than I can. But that's what they are. That's their addiction. I always love the Simon, we talk about this, and you guys, if you haven't heard it, wouldn't it be great if congressmen and women and senators had to wear, and president candidates and presidents, had to wear logos of the corporations that own them on their suits, just like race car drivers.
Oh, yeah. That sounds great.
I think it'd be awesome.
TJ, would you like to offer your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, Congress has, very low standing as far as, the polls are concerned. People have really had it with both parties. Both have a tendency to obstruct the other in order just to score gotcha points. And in a way, that's all they're doing is campaigning. Funny thing happened. Recently, the Senate found out that the CIA had spied on their computers, and they were outraged. Now, when private citizens were outraged when this happened, bullshit, that's just the little people. Yeah, screw them, big deal. And we got to find bad guys. All of a sudden, oh, my God, you were on my computer. Now, suddenly it's a big deal, and they want the CIA head to be fired. Bipartisan. And I thought that was rather amusing. However, we've got bigger problems than somebody spying on a senator's computer at this stage of the game. We've got a situation at the border. Both sides are playing politics with it. Nothing's getting done. We also have situations where it does come down to money. I'm going to say something really radical that would take all money out of politics. A few of you just might faint. Let's go back to corporations not being people. Let's go to a thing called a consumptive tax nationwide where it is progressive because wealthier people buy more shit. You pretty much get rid of the IRS. That way they're not bugging anybody. You can't change the rules. It's just a percentage. You fund things by a basis of what the GDP is, much like Germany does. And they always have a balanced budget. They have enough money to pay for programs and what have you. And then once you get those things out of the way of the Senate and the Congress people, well, they really don't have too much to bitch about, and they really have the will of the people to basically be concerned with, or they don't have jobs. I know it sounds like I'm out there in Pollyanna land, but it's a thought. It's a thought, kind of at the knees where they spend most of their time. It's money that they're either raising for themselves or trying to get a tax break for one of the constituents in their area. One of the funniest things I've ever seen was recently you had a bunch of senators and representatives from the New York area taking a bunch of Illinois companies like Caterpillar and parading them in front of these hearings in Washington, D.C., saying, these are bad people. These are bad people. They take advantage of very legal tax loopholes. Oh, they're horrible people. Show yourself in the mirror, buddy. You're the one that controls the rules. If you don't like the way that these guys are conducting business and they've not broken the law, maybe you need to rewrite the law. And it's just a bunch of misplaced bull roaring, and people really don't take them seriously, nor do they respect them. And here in Illinois, even more so, we've got a fellow who's a long-term senator who's actually got a challenger who's got some pretty serious money that could really make things difficult for him. he's already been trying to control the press, and he got his hands slapped pretty hard here recently. So, yeah, they're playing for something. They're playing for keeps.
Gary, I don't know if you're aware of this, but a member of the House gets a pretty decent paycheck, but better than that, he gets, think it's around $1 million a year as an expense account. So there's, what, 435 of them? So there's $435 million. Should we be paying for our representatives? Because as I recall, being a representative was kind of a guest idea.
I don't have a problem with that. If someone's going to really work and do what they need to do, I'm all for people making money, Simon. I just want to say one thing. When people, TJ and Sam were both saying this, they were making equivalents between the Democrats and the Republican Taliban. They were making equivalents. It would be like if I said to Sam, well, you know, the Palestinians have issues and the Israelis have issues. They both have issues. They're not equal now. Of course, money's always is always the thing that really impacts everything. We know that, and we know the lobbyist destroys everything. We know this, but it always was, or at least it was somewhat manageable. Today, it is completely different. The Republicans have really become a theocratic party. They are nothing like the Republican Party of 15 or 20 years ago. Absolutely nothing. They're a bunch of zealots, and it isn't like this is historic, what we see right now in what's not happening. I mean, our country, our infrastructure, everything, nothing is getting accomplished. There is absolutely zero deal-making. And there was always Democratic deal-making. I'm not going to go back to maybe where Sam knows this stuff, but as far as my memory goes, there was always Democratic deal-making with the Republicans. Now there's absolutely nothing, because if you agree with anything, the Tea Party opponent is going to say you're a compromiser, you're an appeaser, you're spending God knows how much money. And so I think right now the real, if you want to look at, you got to take this with a grain of salt, but never, I won't even say it, but what's going on with the Republican Party is they are the Republican Taliban, and they are a very, very, very dangerous party, and they really need to be destroyed. And I'm not saying the Democrats are great, but they are a problem, and they need to be broken.
Well, that's pretty good for the party that went into the convention that turned down God three times, I guess, in their platform. And it took the mayor of Los Angeles to kind of help a voice vote along, but that's okay. I mean, everybody kind of remembers that, but boy, denying three times, that's a little tough. And I don't believe that the Republicans are necessarily theocratic. I think that they're fractionalized, and I think they have very many factions, much like what the Democrats had many years ago, too, when they were trying to find find their place, and they finally got it together. They finally got consensus. They finally got things to work together as a party. They had people
on
the
far Republican Party is theocratic.
Absolutely crazy. No, I don't. Not, no, there are some
Listen!
There are some there who are absolutely nuts, but they don't represent the whole party. Just like there are guys on the far fringes of the left, they don't represent the whole Democratic Party.
and you're making it equal right now.
No, and you can't generalize either party.
I could easily generalize. Every Republican presidential candidate has to kiss the ring at Bob Jones University, has to be against abortion. They have to pass a litmus test that is so nuts, that is so outrageous, and this is not, and this was not what it was years and years ago. The Republican Party is basically a Christian party, and they are a theocratic party, and it's getting more and more theocratic. And for you to say that it's equal between Democrats and Republicans is
no,
not
I said
seeing things as the
because
way
you
they
have
are.
Fractions, you have factions in both parties that are counter to what the party needs to be. Like
no,
I said,
the Republican Party
ago,
as a whole, the Republican Party as a whole
you
is
don't know,
it,
you don't
it
know,
is not a fraction of it.
From California. The thing is with this party is that it's got so many different factions and sub-factions going on, they're bound to self-implode, and they're going to have to reinvent themselves.
All right.
They
well,
don't
so
have
to
be
have
destroyed
to
by Democrats so that we can have just one-party rule. I mean, it would be nice if we just had one-party rule. There wouldn't be any conflict. There wouldn't be anybody challenging anybody's
no,
ideas.
No. I am for the Republican Party of the 80s and 90s where deal-making was made. But there's nothing on the Democratic side to say.
You're for the party
of
Ronald Reagan?
If you
got
made
a heart attack.
If you made a deal with the Republicans, could you imagine anyone on the Democratic side right now who's running for Congress, right? And
yeah.
He made a deal, and he or she made a deal with the Republican. And the other Democratic candidate who was his rival would say, this guy made a compromise with the Republican. You would never hear that on a Democratic side. On the Republican side, you hear it on every single issue. That's why nothing is getting done to historic measures. Of course you could say there are fractions on both parties, but degree is important. If I have a glass of wine with dinner and you have a bottle of wine, we are both not drinkers. It is different. And if you can't see that, you're ignoring a problem. Even if you're a Republican, you should really respect what I'm saying. Because
I'm not a Republican. I'm a pretty much an independent here. And believe me, I've covered this state capitol here for like 22 years, and I've observed how politics works. I've got a little bit of a working history with it. I'm saying right now that neither party is, at the top of their game. And right now it's all about gotcha. I don't have use for either one, but to say that one is patently a theocratic party is bullshit. You've got factions of it that are, and unfortunately, believe it or not, they get the headlines because it makes people want to watch a little bit to say, oh, wow, geez, how crazy is that getting?
Really? You
no,
had a
not.
Deacon of the Mormon Church was your last candidate for president. Before that, you have an evangelical Christian as president who
and
said...
And John F. Kennedy was Catholic, and your own guys tried to get him
no,
to not
he was
run.
Catholic, but he was not George Bush Catholic. George Bush believed that Jesus Christ was telling him to go into Iraq. Believe you, he was an evangelical Christian. And the next presidential candidate you had was a deacon in the Mormon Church. And then you have Mike Huckabee. And then you have Sarah Palin. And you have all these people.
Sarah
and you
Palin,
simply
what
don't have that on the Democratic side. It is not equal. You are making moral equivalents when it's simply not equal.
Well, I guess you should have no morals, but that's okay.
That's a non-answer. That is an absolute non-answer to my point.
All I'm saying is
well,
there are factions.
I'd rather Sarah Palin.
Simon, you agree with me. Will you please say something?
I'd rather like Sarah Palin. I hear you can
see
a lack of...
She's
entertaining.
Simon downloaded
a picture
of
Sarah Palin.
She's about as wide as a river and deep as a puddle, but I mean...
Gary, I understand where you're coming from, and I appreciate your passion about the religious overtones into American politics. I think it's happened at both parties. I think we're supposed to have a separate. I go back, way back, guys, that we're supposed to have a separation of church and state. Both parties, although of recent, the right wing of the Republican Party has been banging the drum of Christian values, incredibly so, and so obviously that's their base. They got to energize their base for the midterm election. more so than they ever have been. And I agree with that point, Gary. But I don't think, I don't think the Democrats, and they do too. I mean, the Democrats have what they do is they energize their base because they got to get the votes out to stay in power. I don't think that, I think they're both equally, as P.J. O'Rourke once wrote a book called Parliament of Whores. That's what they are. Whether you like it or not, the Republicans and Democrats who represent us at the local level, the state level, the county level, and the federal level are all whores, and they'll sleep with the biggest dollars. And that's the way it is. Some of them, now obviously some of them have to go sleep with religious johns and get money from them. They say what they want to hear. Obviously, you got people like Charlie Rangel, who I don't think most Democrats are like, but he's one of them. He's the guy who gets elected to Congress. He's a blatant crook. He should be behind bars. I look at, when I channel surf, it turns my stomach that Al Sharpton gets paid $1 million a year to host a show, and he's a fraud, and he's a crook, and he's a thief, and he should be in jail. But he's not, because I've got...
Oh, he's a reverend, too, by the way. Jesus, did I say that?
But, I mean, there are crooks, too. The Republican right has crazy Sarah Palin. The Democratic left has Al Sharpton. I mean, you could go tit for tat, tat for tit.
You know what, Sam? It's the same thing as saying that the Israelis have and the Palestinians have moral equivalents.
You're doing a hasty generalization, and that's not going to work with me, Gary. You're doing a hasty generalization. I agree with you to a certain point, but TJ is 100% right. The Republican I'm a libertarian, okay? That's what I am. I'm a libertarian. I probably support more quote-unquote Democratic ideas than Republican ideas. But they're all, in reality, I'd like to see a third party, because both parties are off their rockers, okay? But they're in control. And we get a spoonful of liberal level, from the Democrats. You can almost all of us could easily go and become a Democratic congressman.
All right, Sam, answer my question.
You know what they're going to say? Because it's about playing to the base. It's about
Let me ask you a question. Answer this one question. If a Democrat makes a deal with a Republican, will his rival for office hold that against him? No. Will a Republican deal?
Who's his rival?
Another Democrat.
In a primary or a general election?
Yeah, in a primary, okay?
Of course he would.
No, he wouldn't. It's never happened. You never hear about it.
He'd say he sold out.
No, you don't. You never hear about that.
If I was a Democratic challenger and the sitting Democrat made a deal with the Republican, I'd say, he's a sellout. He's a sellout. He's one of them. He's not one of us. Come on.
Give me one example when that's happened, and I'll give you 50 examples where it's happened on the other side. You just give me one example that in one bill, if it's one bill, if it's an innocuous bill.
Okay, Gary, I'll give you a good example. I live in an area where a Republican hasn't been elected for 60 years at the local, county, and federal level. So I can't give you an example. The guy in power, the Republican Party in my county, has their meetings in a phone booth. And if you can find, that's how bad it is. Okay, I'm not saying that makes, I'm
all right,
a look at
Democrat. You know what, you guys,
I can't give you an example, Gary, because I don't know
if you guys
any.
If you guys are making the equivalent.
Who ran for Democratic vice president, Joe something or other, from out east, and he started palling up with McCain, and when it came to the point where he was actually running for his Senate seat again, he got beat in the primary because his opponent held his buddiness with McCain against him and paraded it around, and it wasn't until he became an independent that he actually turned around and beat his opponent. And I can't remember Joe's last name, but I think he ran
Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman.
That is your example, but if you want to sit here, it's almost like I'm through the looking glass. If you two really smart, intelligent men are making an equivalence between the Democratic Party, where you basically have Obama, who's a moderate Republican, and you're equating that with today's Republican Party. Today's Republican Party is absolutely nuts. But the Republican Democrats, while flawed, are nowhere near as dangerous as the Republican is today. And for you to say, well, they're both bad, they're both having troubles, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's basically not interested in reality. It's like to say they're both the same, and you could pull out the good old Al Sharpton routine, is like to say from a party, from a national party.
Well, no,
and
you
what's going
Sarah
on?
Palin. I'm just trying to point out. I'm not a fan of Sarah Palin or Al Sharpton. But,
what I'm
but
saying, Cam,
say
is that nothing is being passed.
Other.
I'm saying nothing is being passed to historic measures by this Congress and this party. And
not
it is different than
the...
You have Harry Reid, who has never passed a goddamn budget in his career as the head of the Senate. He has also sat on about a million bills that won't even get to the floor of the Senate. Now, the House is just as obstructionist, too. But by golly, Harry Reid's a god. He's a god, by golly.
All right,
oh,
you guys
way,
are making equivalents.
I got another Joe Lieberman moment, but not for Joe. Our sitting Democratic congressman who went to jail by the name of James Traficant, you probably heard of him. Matter of fact,
yeah,
he would probably get elected today.
Wait, no. How did
he
elect the Democrat? He voted in order to bring pork home for this our community. He voted for Dennis Hassett as Speaker of the House. He was a Democrat. Hassett was a Republican because Hassett promised him money to build a new a new courthouse or something that this area needed. All right, awesome. All congressmen want pork. Okay, yum yum yum. They love that. Well, Traficant voted for that, and Tim Ryan, who's now been in Congress, beat him in the primary because he used that against him. Because he voted for a Republican in order to bring something to this community, Ryan annihilated him in the primary, and he's there, and he's as partisan as they come by. So, Gary, it does happen, and we could go sit up through that, but we're just comparing apples to oranges. Yes, I think both parties are equally bad because Citizens United, and they're Parliament of Boys, and that's all they care about. And if you think they care about you, if you think they care about legalizing drugs, if you think they care about fighting carbon emissions and doing all that stuff, I got a vacant house in Youngstown I'd like to give you. But they don't. They care about themselves and themselves only. Don't fall for the red meat that they throw out. You're smarter than that.
Okay, folks.
I give up.
Okay, folks, I'm looking at the clock. We're absolutely flat out of time.
Yeah.
But I was just having so much fun listening to the rest of you go at it. So let's
Simon
go.
Springer.
Yeah, indeed. The good news is, I don't need security guards because everyone is, on the telephone. So, there's no actual fisticuffs.
Well, here's the good thing. The NSA knows everything we said.
Right. So, let me go once around the table and get everyone's parting thoughts. Bill, I'll start with you.
I really enjoyed the last part of this show because it reminded me of some of the television shows like Phil Donahue, where you planted people in there with really bad opinions, and people just got to argue. That was kind of exciting for me. It got my adrenaline off and everything, and it makes me, sometimes it's such a boring show that this is really exciting. So I think I'm going to come back next week. This is great.
and TJ, clearly you said a bunch of stuff today that I seriously doubt you would say on a syndicated radio program.
Or a local one, for that matter. I didn't have my dump button handy, but I tell you what, it's always good to have a vigorous exchange of ideas, and it's good that everybody can be heard and what have you. We get a little bit passionate, but at the end of the day, I can't think of a better way to spend a Sunday afternoon with a bunch of guys with a bunch of different opinions. It's really pretty cool. It's kind of unique. You don't get the chance to do that in many places of the world.
Right. And Gary. Uh-oh. Gary's gone quiet.
Did Gary leave?
What's that? I'm here. Simon, I'm mad at you because I know you agree with me. So you're just leaving me out with the wolves. You're totally leaving me out with the wolves. And it's like I'm begging for help. And you're sitting there just like, la-di-da, la-di-da. And I'm going, I'm being eaten alive. And so I'm a little resentful right now. I'm not gonna be too much of a hater. But
let me just interject this. I'm thinking that Simon is really a closet Republican, and that's what it's all about.
Oh wow! Wow!
Bill was a good one.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sure you voted for that senator guy who lost, but too bad, Simon. I'm sorry that
Gary,
he didn't win.
I can assure you that I really don't have any political leanings. I just
wow.
like to listen in on a good fight.
Fair enough. I'll take you at your word, I think.
And Sam.
Football, Simon, I think you're an awesome moderator. Moderators can't take sides. Sorry. And Gary, don't have a glass of wine. Drink a bottle of wine tonight. And let me close with this. Well, here's one of my favorite quotes about political parties. I'm going to leave it on this. Thank you, everybody, for making my Sunday evening and Sunday afternoon. It was great, wonderful. Gary, I'm always jealous. You got 3 more hours to have fun because you're in California. But here's my quote. I once said to my father when I was a boy, "Hey, Dad, we need a third political party." He said to me, "I'll settle for a second, Ralph Nader."
I like it. Gentlemen, it has been a wonderful exchange of ideas, and I do hope we can do it again next week. Till then, I want to wish everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Until then, goodbye.